This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Riding 576 winners before transitioning to the training side. To date, he has saddled more than 1,150 winners. He boasts a career win percentage of 23.5%, and his runners have banked nearly $31 million in purses. Not too shabby. Please join me in welcoming trainer Todd Fincher to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
As I'm rattling off your brief resume there, and I know there's a lot more to your story that we're going to talk about over the course of the next hour, but as I'm going through some of those numbers, more than 1,150 winners, that big win percentage that you have, $31 million in purses, what are some of the things that were coming to mind as I'm going through those numbers?
What was coming to mind? Say that again.
Yeah, what were some of the things coming to mind as I was going through those numbers?
Yeah, it's just I'm getting old. That's the first thing I thought of. No, but we've paid a lot of dues. If you go back and look at, which it sounds like you have, if you look at statistics, you know, started off from the bottom, you know, not running very many horses, and the stable just steadily grew year after year, and same with my riding career. Very few starts, very few winners the early years, and then got better as time went on. And the only thing you mentioned were 500-something thoroughbred wins as a jockey. I think I had 300-something quarter horse wins as well. So
yeah,
I would ride about anything. I actually rode I think 4 mule races and rode an Arabian one and paints and Appaloosas. So we'd get on anything we could because I knew, one, I loved it, and two, I knew my career was very limited because I'm 6 foot tall.
So but you ride all these different types of horses, all these different breeds. Isn't riding a horse riding a horse, or is it different from breed to breed?
Oh, well, the breeds are completely different. The quarter horses are just, I mean, it's the same, but it's different. It's just pure speed on a quarter horse, pure acceleration, and thoroughbreds is, you know, it takes a little more tactics and thinking involved than quarter horse. Quarter horse, you just go as fast as you can till you get to the wire. So there's not much thinking involved, or you just go all you can in thoroughbreds. Obviously, you got to make decisions, you know, of how fast to go early and where to put your horse it's strategy, a lot of strategy, and there's absolutely no strategy actually in quarter horse racing. And if there is, there's very little. So, and then Arabians that's something else. Those things, they just canter around there. So yeah, it's a little different, but basically the same.
You also referenced the more than 1,150 wins as a trainer with thoroughbreds, but you train quarter horses too. So do you know how many quarter horse wins you have?
I don't know that. It's probably over 200, but not sure how many. My quarter horse stable dwindled over the years. It's tough business, that quarter horse game is. It's really tough. A lot of luck involved, and you know, especially when you're running in trials and stuff like that. But actually, quarter horses are way easier to train than a thoroughbred, just for the reasons I noted earlier. You know, you not much strategy. You just teach them to leave the gates as fast as they can and run as fast as they can, and that's basically the strategy to quarter horses. And thoroughbreds are a lot more strategy goes into it, a lot more training, much more difficult to train. But they're different, but they're the same, absolutely.
You mentioned that you're 6 foot tall, so the idea of being a jockey eventually goes out the window, because as you continue to get bigger and mature, you get too heavy to be a jockey and you can't ride anymore. Do you still get on your own horses today and gallop a little bit?
I don't anymore. I did for a long time, but I don't anymore. Usually have too much going on, you know, have need 40 horses to go to the track in one day, and then I need horses going to the gate, and I need to take them to the gate, and I need to watch them all. So I've kind of phased out of that, of getting on them, which I miss it a little bit, but there's just too much stuff to do, and if I'm out there on my own, then I'm going to miss too much. So I've kind of phased out of that.
Yeah, I've had people tell me over the years, people that will get on their own horses or even just pony their horses, that there's something about being on the back of a horse that is just, it's relaxing. It's somewhat therapeutic. How would you describe it, Todd? What's the feeling when you're just out ponying a horse or being on a horse in general?
It just kind of makes you feel like you're riding, you know, got your head in the game and you're right in on it and paying attention, and you mean you're standing around watching. You kind of can not doze off, but just kind of get caught up in a conversation or something and not really pay attention. But when you're on a horse, you're always more focused, I think. But and I've been getting on a horse every day for as long as I can remember, and now we moved to Houston, and I don't have my pony horse here. It's a little different, so little bit weird not getting up and getting on my horse every day. But it's fun to ride, and it's been a part of my life forever. Just not doing it right now anymore is a little different.
At what point did you realize that you weren't going to be able to continue as a jockey and you wanted to make the move to training?
Well, actually, when I was younger, every year in my class, I was always the smallest one. I was a runt. You know, I was always the smallest one. My dad was a jockey, so I didn't think, no way I wasn't going to be a jockey. And then between 10th and 11th grade, I went from about 5'1", 5'2", to like 5'11". So so I figured I was done. But when I turned 16 in that summer, between my junior and senior year, I said, well, I'm going to go ride, which I was pretty heavy, but I said, I'm going to go ride, which I knew it would probably only last that summer, but I ended up going back and finishing my senior year and really didn't think of anything else I wanted to do. So I fought my weight and got it down and ended up with a 10-year career.
Yeah, and riding 800-plus winners between thoroughbreds and quarter horses is no small accomplishment, so you were obviously pretty good.
Well, to be honest, the first 3 years, I wasn't very good at all, especially the first couple. And then eventually I just worked at it, and got better and better. And then, you know, and like riding in New Mexico, when you're riding quarter horses, you're riding some of the best in the world, if not the best in the world. And so I got to ride at the top of the game there. The quarter horse level back then is before the casinos, so the purses were real small. So the thoroughbreds were pretty low quality, but quarter horses were the best quality in the world. So I got to ride at the top level in the quarter horse game anyway. But loved riding them both.
What do you remember about the first time you ever competed in an actual race as a jockey?
Well, I was 16 years old, didn't have a quarter to my name, and was very excited to do it. I, you know, growing up in the horse racing business, most kids like myself, that's the first thing you want to do is be a jockey. And that day had come, even though it was at a very small track, Raton in New Mexico. I was scared and nervous, but that day had finally come.
Yeah, and you're loading into the starting gate. I'd imagine there were plenty of butterflies there, right?
Yeah, the only thing I just kept going through my mind is don't forget to put your goggles down. That's the one thing that, that, you know, people get nervous and forget to do that. But that people warn me about that, and that's one thing I remember to do. That's all I could think about is put your goggles down.
You said for the first 3 years you weren't very good. You weren't a great rider, but then you eventually turned out to be pretty good. So what was it that you learned in those first 3 years, and how did you go from being not so good to being a pretty good rider?
Well, just by riding, just by experience. The more you could get on, the better you could be, and I was very serious about it. I took it very serious, and I didn't mess around. I worked hard, and I just got better and better, but it took a while. You know, it's like I was starting from scratch. Even though I come from a racehorse family, I started riding at 16 when I had probably no business riding, you know what I mean? I just didn't have enough experience, but it's something that I wanted to do, and I figured it'd just be a summer thing because I got so tall. And so I learned from trial and error and getting on more and more horses, and like I said, I wasn't prepared to be a rider when I started.
Did you have a mentor on the jockey side that kind of helped you along, or that you would pick their brain and say, hey, you know, give me a little bit of advice here?
Not really. I mean, my dad was a jockey for 25 years, and then my brother, he was a few years older than me, and he tried to ride a little bit. He was a little too heavy, but, yeah, he would try to help me out as much as he could, but there's only so much you can tell a young rider about riding. That you really just have to do it and learn from doing it, just making mistakes and learning from different scenarios you're put in out on the track, and that's why it took me so long. It's because when I started, I didn't know. I probably shouldn't have been out there, but it was just a lifelong dream, and I figured it would last the summer, and I'd be back in school and have to find a different career, but it just took me a while to get better, to be honest with you. If I was a trainer, I wouldn't have put myself on a horse. I know that.
Talking with trainer Todd Fincher here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, what do you think that other career might be if you didn't follow this path and you weren't involved in the horse business?
Yeah, I mean, I thought long and hard about that. For you know, what other interests do I have? Do I have any other interests? Do I want to go to college? Nothing really interests me. I was really close to joining the military just to have a chance at some type of career, you know, because I just didn't know what to do with my life, and school was not really an option. I didn't really care for school. I didn't have the funds to go to college, so military was the other option, and that was about the time Desert Storm hit and stuff like that, so I decided to quit eating and try being a jockey again.
How difficult was it to keep your weight down?
I just didn't eat. I just, you know, when you're younger, 16, 17, 18, it really wasn't too hard. I mean, I didn't eat much at all, but it wasn't too hard, and I know it sounds stupid, but once you get older, like 22, 23, it really got really difficult for me to keep my weight down, and I did my best to prolong my career as long as I could, because I think it's the best job in the world personally. It's low stress, and if you're a competitive person, you get out there and you get in the middle of the fight every day, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it, and I fought it as long as I could, and I retired at the ripe old age of 26.
Did I read where your diet when you were riding consisted of a lot of watermelon?
No, that's not me.
That's not true.
My diet. It would be I would open a diet soda when I got home from work every morning, and I'd take a sip and put it back in the refrigerator, and throughout the day I'd finish one diet soda. That's all the liquid I'd have, and then a lot of peanut M&Ms. I would snack on peanut M&Ms when I'd get really hungry. I'd have a little bit of peanut M&Ms, And then on Sunday nights, it was the big steak dinner night. We'd get me an 8-ounce steak and baked potato, and I could barely finish the steak. My stomach was so small, but I was looking forward to Sunday nights every week.
How were you able to keep your strength up and be at the top of your game physically with a diet that consisted of peanut M&Ms and a diet soda?
I don't know. I mean, I had a very strong ambition and drive to keep that job, with the fear of, if I don't do that, I won't have a job and I won't have a career in anything, and then I'd have to move on to something else, which scares you at that age because you don't know what else you're gonna be able to do or even want to do.
Well,
so that kept that kept my motivation really strong, just the fear of the unknown, you know, and no real safety net of a next plan B. And the love of the game, you know, I loved it. Absolutely have loved it since I was growing up in the business and still do to this day.
Yeah, there's a saying that says that if you truly want to be successful, you burn all bridges. You can't go back. You have no choice but to be successful and move forward, and that is exactly what my guest today, Todd Fincher, decided to do. It has worked out beautifully for him one of the premier trainers that we have in the sport, training more than 1,150 winners in that career. Todd, let me go back to your background for a minute. You said this is all you ever really wanted to do. You grew up in the business. Your parents were both involved. Take me back to the beginning, growing up in Denver, and tell me about your family.
Well, I mean, it's just, you just grow up a kid, just a normal kid, but you know, some people just really latch on, and then to the sport like I did. I mean, I grew up in the barn, messing with horses all the time, getting to know their personalities, hanging out. Then when I was about 9-10 years old, started working for my parents, actually drawing a paycheck, but worked really hard and just was around it all the time, and then grooming horses and working in the barn. And then you go up, you're with that horse every day, and you watch them go up there and run, and you have so much pride in that horse, wanting him to do good, and it just gets in your blood, and there's really nothing, I mean, there's really nothing else I'd want to do but be in this sport.
Were your parents, it sounds like they encouraged you to follow in their footsteps and get involved in the industry.
Well, you know, they did something that I think is very important for kids that doesn't happen much anymore, is they put you to work. You know, you had a responsibility. You had to get up and you had to go to the barn, whether it's 9 years old, 10 years old, and you had to work, you know. And I think it gives people, kids, a drive and a work ethic that may be lacking in these times. But, yeah, we were made to work. Even when we were at home, we were made to work. But when we went to the barn, we were working, and then by the time we were 12, 13, we were even finding jobs for other trainers going to work, you know, because we wanted the money, so we went to work, and we liked what we did, and we knew what we were doing somewhat about horses, so we developed a work ethic at a young age, so parents surely did right by us then, for sure, because it's paid off.
Well, your dad, Leroy, your mom, Leslie, where did they train in Colorado?
At Centennial is where they used to run at Centennial. Well, when I was real little, like 3 years old, they used to have the Colorado Fair circuit. They had a bunch of little towns they'd go to, and they'd run 2 weeks at one track, small little fair track, and then they would move to another one, and they'd stay there 2 weeks and run. And they had several around in those little towns in Colorado, and with the biggest one being the Colorado State Fair, which was in Pueblo, Colorado. And that's where I was pretty young back then, but that's what they did. Every group of trainers moved from track to track every 2 weeks in the fair circuits, and that's where it started. And then we ended up, when I was older, like 6'7". We were 5'6", 7". We were running at Centennial in the spring and in the winter. And then in the summertime, they'd go to Raton and run horses.
So what do you remember about
12 months out of the year, we were racing or at a racetrack or something.
Yeah, what do you remember about racing at those different venues as you were growing up? How would you describe it to somebody that's never been part of it?
Well, I mean, it's just a lifestyle. That's, you just lived it. I mean, you woke up in a trailer, a mobile home, a travel trailer, that was parked close to the barn. You got up and you went to the barn and hung around if you're little, and if you're old enough to work, you worked. I mean, it was just, it was your home. And then when the fair meets quit running and we started running at Centennial, we lived in Denver, and we used to get off, and when I was in junior high school, or even elementary, like fifth, sixth grade, we'd get done with school and we'd run to the, go catch the city bus. That city bus would take you straight to the racetrack. And if we had any horses in and we knew my parents would still be there, we'd scrounge up 75 cents and run and get on the city bus and go straight to the track after school. So we really, I mean, it's not that it was forced upon us. It was something that we loved to do.
How many brothers or sisters did you have?
Say that again?
How many brothers or sisters do you have?
I just have one brother, my older brother, Rhett. He's been in the horse racing business quite a bit, and now it's in the more like he does the natural horsemanship, teaching, going and training horses and training their brains and helping people out that don't have the means to really teach their horse, bad habits, to get them out of it. And he's went into that field and got away from the horse racing, but he followed the horse racing game for a long time. And then he went and did the Pirelli method of training all over the country, helping people out that need it or looking for help on straightening some horses out that turned a little rogue on them.
Yeah, he's very much a I read an article about your brother Rhett, and I immediately thought of Horse Whisperer, right? Somebody who can do this on a different level than what we normally see. Is that right?
Yeah, basically that's what they're doing, is really retraining the horse's mind and brain and teaching the trust issue, and very important. For any horse, racehorse, pleasure horse, anything like that, is really having their mind in a good place where they trust the people around them completely.
That's what
he does, and been doing it a long time, actually.
Yeah, you mentioned the Pirelli method. What is that?
That's called the natural horsemanship method, and it's them doing basically what I said, training the horse's mind, or retraining the horse's mind, and to where the horse has complete trust in the person, and they do a very good job at it. He's actually years ago come and helped me break horses when I started a bunch of young horses out, and they spend a lot of time with them, and they really do a good job, you know, in breaking them and teaching them to not have fear in people and trust in people, and it's really a great method for teaching a horse good trust, and that's extremely important. I don't care what you're doing, horse racing or whatever. Horse's mind is just as important as anything else on them, is having a good mind and having trust and believing in that you're not going to hurt them, you know. And then you can get them to do about anything you want them to do if they trust you.
I think the article that I read was talking about the time that Rhett spent in the what's called the Colt Starting Challenge USA in Durango, Colorado. What is that all about?
Yeah. Well, I think what they did was they'd bring like like five horses in and have people pick the horse, and they have half a day or a day to work with them, and whoever makes the most progress in one day wins, you know. And, you know, there'll be sometimes some horses really respond really quickly. You know, horses have never been ridden or really messed with or touched much, and by the end of the half day or the day or however long the contest is, sometimes they can have them horses where they're standing on their backs, and just amazing how quickly they can gain the trust of some horses by doing their method.
Will you ever call him?
Basically having the horse, how quickly the horse will accept the human in their trust. So.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned, Todd, that he's helped you when breaking horses in the past. Will you ever call him and say, hey, Rhett, listen, I've got this one horse. I'm having a little bit of trouble relating to this horse or getting him to trust me. What do you suggest I do? Does that conversation ever take place?
No, not really. He's too far away, really. But it's too hard to explain that to somebody. You kind of have to be there and see it yourself. And although I'm not a Pirelli student or anything, you know, we use somewhat the same concepts they do as far as taking our time and earning the horse's trust and stuff like that. But I've never had one where I've needed to do that. And if I did, I would have to bring him in. And I'm sure if there was a special case like that, I'm sure he could come and help us out. But really never had that so far.
Visiting with trainer Todd Fincher here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, stay with me. I'm going to get you a short commercial break. When we come back, we will talk about some of the top horses you've had the privilege to be around, both thoroughbred and quarter horse, and we'll look at some of the career milestones that you've been able to achieve in this illustrious career. That's all ahead on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Fasig Tipton is bringing the heat to Miami with the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale of selected two-year-olds in training. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale will be held on March 31st after the Florida Derby over Gulfstream Park's dirt racetrack. The sale has a history of producing the sport's very best horses, including last year's Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Nadal, as well as top horses Bellafina, Dona Veloce, Yapin, and Share the Ride. You will find no higher concentration of quality in any two-year-old sale in 2021. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 31st at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Mr. Monomoy is bringing his speed and outstanding pedigree to the state of New York. Mr. Monomoy broke his mane in his second start at 2, running 6.5 furlongs wire to wire, winning by 5.5 lengths. Prepping for the Kentucky Derby, he won the historic Grade 2 Mile and an Eighth Risen Star at Fairgrounds by 2.5 lengths. Mr. Monomoy's half-sister, Monomoy Girl, is a twice Breeders' Cup Distaff winner and a double Eclipse Award champion. Other stallions that are half-brothers to two-time champions include leading sires Kozan and Into Mischief. Mr. Monomoy has the impressive looks to complement his race record and pedigree. Book your mare today to the next stallion that has all the momentum to be a perennial leading sire in the state of New York.
Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2021. Take advantage of competitive purse structures with huge bonuses for Ontario breds and a Woodbine backstretch equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track, a 7 furlong turf training track, a 2 furlong sand ring, and a 1/2 mile European jogging path. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all-weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile E.P. Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 17th. Follow us at Woodbine TB on social media and reach out to our team at woodbine.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Runaway Ghost has dashed away in the Derby. Runaway Ghost make a break for home here, out by 2.5. Dream Baby Dream running on with Seven Trumpets. All Out Blitz in New York Central at Tired. Runaway goes well ahead. Four in front. Down the outside. Dream Baby Dream is picking away. Runaway goes well ahead. Dream Baby Dream, the only danger. But what a local support has come to fruition. What a win. Runaway Ghost has done it.
Well, Runaway Ghost did indeed do it. That was the 2018 running of the Sunland Derby. It was a race that would put trainer Todd Fincher on the Derby trail for the first time in his career, and he is my special guest here on Trainer Talk this afternoon. If you missed any portion of the show, remember, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. And remember to follow us on social media, at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and on Instagram. Well, Todd, that call of Runaway Ghost and that big win in the Sunland Derby in 2018, boy, that has to bring back some good memories, huh?
Yeah, that was pretty awesome feeling, let me tell you. That horse, he broke slow that day. He's always broke really well. He broke slow and got way back, which we wanted him off the pace, so that wasn't too bad. But he got caught about six or seven wide on both turns and just ran by him like they were tied to a fence, so it was more impressive than what people might think. But, that was the biggest win in my thoroughbred career for sure.
Yeah, when he finally crossed the finish line and you realize, well, number one, you just qualified for the Kentucky Derby, but number two, you just won the Sunland Derby in a state, New Mexico, that has meant so much to you and to your career. What's that feeling like, Todd?
Yeah, I mean, every year Baffert brings horses in, and horses come from all over the country. I mean, it almost never goes to a local trainer there because basically people in New Mexico don't get these quality of horses brought to them ever. So, you know, people are trying to get in the Kentucky Derby and they carry an $800,000 purse and you're getting really good horses brought in there. And I mean, it's almost impossible, it seems like, for a local to win that race. And as a 12-horse gate, as a full field, very exciting. Big, like I said, I mean, it just put us right in the Kentucky Derby, and instead of being relieved, I think I was more nervous after we won because how well he looked, and then getting put on the biggest stage in racing instantly like that was a different feeling, you know.
Yeah, all of a sudden the media attention comes and people start talking about, I remember they were talking about Runaway Ghost. There were people that said, he's my wise guy pick. I think he's the next horse that can pull off a bit of an upset, if you will, in the Kentucky Derby. And there were a lot of people that liked him. And then all of a sudden, after his final workout before the Derby, he ends up coming up with an injury. You have to scratch. And you talk about going from the highest highs to the lowest lows. Tell me about when you saw that happen and you got that news.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you've been in this business long enough, you've had those kind of heartbreaks many, many times. Obviously not at that level, but it's nothing new in this sport for a horse to come up with an injury. And it was an absolute injury. It was something that, you know, we knew, you know, we weren't going to try to mask it or hide it or anything like that. It was just something that, you know, horse first, race, you know, done deal. It was over. There was no wondering, well, can we still possibly make it? It was a definite we're out. And so, you know, it's just a really quick resolve there and just have to move on from there. You know, the owners took it well. Obviously, everybody had made all their plans for hotels and everything and houses and in Louisville and all that had to be canceled. But it was a great run and there's no questioning what we were going to do. So it was over real quick, very sad, punch to the gut, but it happens. And if you can never relax in this game, you can never relax in this game because something like that, anything like that can happen at any time.
Well, you're back on the Derby trail this year with a horse named Senor Buscador, who just this past weekend finished fifth in the Risen Star at the Fairgrounds. He ran a very credible race. We'll talk more about that race and about him in a minute, but sticking with Runaway Ghost for a minute, I want to give you some more props, Todd, because he wasn't just away from the races for a month or two after that Sunland Derby. We didn't see him again until early February of the following year. So tell me about getting him back to the races. And by the way, when he came back in the Fort Bliss Stakes at Sunland Park, he won. Well done.
Yeah, he came back. You know, his injury was a hairline fracture of a cannon bone, which those injuries heal 100%. They don't knock a horse down from 100% to 90 or 95 when they come back. Those injuries completely heal. There's no cartilage damage or anything on a cannon bone. So we just gave him the proper amount of time and then took our time bringing him back. You know, being a little conservative maybe, but took plenty of time to bring him back and actually wanted to run him before the Fort Bliss, but none of those races would fill, so we couldn't get a prep. So we had to train him right into Fort Bliss, and he just showed how good he was.
Is there a part of you that was a bit nervous when he's going into the starting gate for that first race back in the Fort Bliss?
Well, not. I mean, just if you didn't run good, if people look at you and think, well, he did this wrong, he should have done this. But no, he, you know, off that long of a layoff and then have to come into a stakes race is hard to do. You know, it's not like you're coming back in a playing Middle Tennessee State for your comeback game. You know, you're going up against the best. So that made it a little tough. But yeah, and then sometimes horses come off some kind of injury, even if they're 100%. It might be in their head, and they might not run as good as you think. But I was pretty confident he was going to run good. But he ran outstanding that day.
Well, you've had a lot of success with that family too. You trained his dam, Rose's Desert. Tell me a little bit about her.
Yeah, I mean they brought her into my barn when she was just a yearling, and we broke her and started working her and shin buck really bad on both fronts. So we just kicked her out. And never, you know, just ended up being one of my all-time favorites. If she's not number one, she's in the top three or four. So she's been great. She was great for us at the barn. We loved her. And then turned out to be an outstanding broodmare. Had four foals. Three of them are stakes winners. And the other one I think will be a stakes winner at some point. So she's been awesome.
Yeah, Rose's Desert, again, the dam of Runaway Ghost, who won the 2018 Sunland Derby, the biggest win of his career for trainer Todd Fincher, who is with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, you trained Runaway Ghost to 14 career starts, including 6 stakes victories in those 14 outings. That's pretty darn good. He is now retired and standing at Double L Farms in Bosque, New Mexico. Tell me a little bit about Double L and sending him out there.
Yeah, Double L does a great job with his breeding program, and he's got a guy on his side named Mike Abraham who buys a bunch of mares in Keeneland and stuff like that, and he's got quite a few brood mares, and I think it's a good spot for that horse to land. To get some mare power to him and see what he can do as a sire. But the way the family looks, I don't think you can go wrong breeding a Runaway Ghost in New Mexico. I think that's going to be one of their premier studs in the state.
Yeah, I'd imagine he's going to be extremely popular, and rightfully so after that career that he had. Just a great run for Runaway Ghost. You're back on the Derby trail this year. I mentioned that a short time ago with Senor Buscador, who won the Springboard Mile at Remington last year, comes back in his 3-year-old debut last Saturday, fifth in the Grade 3 Risen Star. I thought it was a really good race for him. How about you?
At first, they're a little disappointed, and then when you put everything together and see, it was a huge speed bias track. You know, the rail was, I think there was a rail bias, a speed bias, And those are both non-conducive to the way he runs. You know, he comes from the back of the bus, was parked out there three or four wide the first turn, and then the turn before the turn for home, he was out there 7-8 wide, and he still made a big run. And I thought he was a little flat at the end, but blame that on me for being a little conservative on preparing him. I had him fit and ready, but I just didn't have him tightened down as much as I probably should have. But looking back, I think it turned out to be the right decision, because I think he could have run fourth in that race just off of his style and the way the track was playing. I think it's almost impossible mission to go 5-6 wide around that turn and come from 12-15 lengths behind and think you're going to win on that track that day. So he came out of the race unbelievably good, and we took him to the track this morning, and he looked like a monster. So now we just keep going up the ladder and building him up, and hopefully we'll get him peaked here pretty quick. And his next start, wherever that may be, I think he's going to run. You're going to see a much better race than you saw here, which I still think the race is better than it looks on paper, too.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I thought it was a pretty solid effort on his part. Was it enough, Todd, as you look toward the first Saturday in May, to keep those Derby dreams alive with him? Is that at least the plan, even though you don't know exactly where he's going to end up?
Yeah, I mean, that's our goal, is to get to the Kentucky Derby, win at least one prep. And like I said, I think you're going to see a much better race next time out of him than you saw here, which I still don't think he ran that bad. I think he ran all right. You know, I just truly expect what I've seen, how he come back, and how I know he is prepared for this last one, and how I know the track was playing, and all everything involved. I think you're going to see a much better race this next time out of him.
What do you do now, Todd, to tighten the screws a little bit? Or is this race last Saturday enough to kind of get those screws tightened up?
Well, this race has tightened them a bunch. Last race did. And then maybe be a little more aggressive. I was pretty conservative, like I said. I mean, he's 2 months since he ran, and he's had some, it looks like short works, but, you know, he had some big gallop ups to those 3-8s and then huge gallop outs after. So he was actually going way further than it looked like. The horse wasn't tired. I mean, after the race, I mean, he wasn't blowing exhausted. He just gave him too much to do, you know, against really nice horses. He just had too much to do out there in the middle of the track and that far back. So I think we got his attention now, and that race will tighten him and maybe be a little more aggressive going in the next one. But this race here tightened him down pretty good, I promise you.
Visiting with trainer Todd Fincher on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, you mentioned the fact that Rose's Desert was special to you for a lot of different reasons. She became a great broodmare, and the dam of Runaway Ghost. And now we talked about Senor Buscador. Who are some of the other horses, when you think back on your career, that are always going to stand out to you?
Well, I've had several really good New Mexico breds. I honestly never really got into the whole open horse. You know, my career started out slow, just like my riding career, with very few horses and being in New Mexico, I carried mostly New Mexico breds and did quite a few quarter horses. And once Sunland Park they ended up having a good stake schedule for 3-year-old fillies and 3-year-old colts, they put in a 3-race series for both of them, is when I started getting into the open horses and, you know, building your clientele and everything else as well. But getting into the open horses, and they have a good Derby preps. They have 3 races ending with the Sunland Derby, and then the Oaks. They got 3 races ending with the Sunland Oaks, and with qualifying points to the Derby. And then I started getting more and more open horses. So it's just basically didn't have those type of horses before, until the last 6 or 7 years we started getting a few more in the barn. And the other ones are New Mexico bred, probably nobody heard of them, but I did have a horse a couple of years ago, a New Mexico bred named Hustle Up, and he ran in the Sunland Derby and was was he wasn't the favorite, but he was less than 10-1 odds. I mean, he headed Mucho Gusto around all the way to the quarter pole. So he was a very talented horse that won some big races in New Mexico and was capable of running with Kentucky bred horses. He was a complete opposite of Buscador. He would run off to the front, and there was not a whole lot you could do about it. He was just extremely aggressive, and he's been one of the good ones. I had a mare named Diabolical Dame, really nice mare, made a lot of money, won a ton of state races, kind of the same scenario as Rose's Desert. And I've been very fortunate over the last 15 years to just have an unbelievable amount of good New Mexico breds, but not that many open horses just because we just don't get them until recently, last 5 or 6 years maybe, which I'm thankful now we do because New Mexico's not running, and I'm able to move around. And like right now I'm in Houston running horses and have Buscador here to hopefully take us somewhere, like Louisville here in another couple months.
Yeah, that would sure be nice. Hey, you joined me last Saturday on my equine forum show, and one of the questions I asked you that day was if you let yourself even think that far ahead to the first Saturday in May, and you said, yeah, you almost have to, right? Because of course you're planning the schedule to get there. You almost have to let yourself dream of what that moment would be like to make the walk over and to be part of that.
Yeah, we wake up dreaming in this sport every day. We're always and when you don't have a horse like him in the barn, your dreams are a little smaller. Well, maybe I can win this allowance race here next week or this or that with this horse. But when you have a horse like him, of course you're dreaming of that. I mean, that's why you're in the business, is to reach the upper echelon and set high goals. And that's my dream, to win the Kentucky Derby, win Breeders' Cup races, Triple Crown races. Absolutely. I'm getting to that point. So yeah, this isn't something I'm just now dreaming of. I've been dreaming of this since I was a child.
Do you remember watching the Kentucky Derby growing up, Todd?
Yeah, absolutely. As a kid, from as far as I can remember, yes, Kentucky Derby, All-American Fraternity, those are the two things the area I grew up in. It was Kentucky Derby and All-American Fraternity. So,
who were some of your favorite horses
absolutely
growing up?
Two goals I'd still like to reach one day.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Who were some of your favorite horses growing up?
Well, I mean, overall horses favorite?
Yeah.
Oh, there's just so many you can try to name.
Yeah, for me, for example, Todd, I was a big Holy Bull fan, and Easy Goer was a horse that kind of got me hooked on racing back in the late 80s. Did you have a horse like that you just fell in love with early on as a kid?
I remember Holy Bull, and I was probably about 21 when he was running, something like that, and we went to my brother is working for Carl Napster, and we went and seen him at Gulfstream, and that's what we wanted to do. I wanted to go look at Holy Bull. And at that time, Carl Napster was in the barn with Bill Mott, and all morning this pretty bay horse kept walking around. I kept saying, man, it's a pretty horse. Well, it turned out to be Cigar, and I was not even worried about looking at him. I couldn't wait to go look at Holy Bull. And turned out Cigar just turned out to be a monster. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a great story. Holy Bull and Easy Goer and horses like that, they had such an influence on me being involved in the sport in the first place and becoming a fan. And then, of course, it just segue into a career from there. But you always have those horses that capture you early on. I want to go back to another horse you mentioned a minute ago. That was Hustle Up, who in 2019 won the Mind That Bird Derby. And that win was extremely special for you, Todd. It was milestone win number 1,000. Take me back to that day and to that race.
Yeah, that was a big day. I think the 999th win was a stakes race from Runaway Ghost. And then the next race, or two races later, was Hustle Up that hit the 1,000 mark. So, yeah, that was a big day. Hustle Up was a hugely talented horse. If he would relax like Buscador does, there's no telling how good that horse could have been. He was just, we just could not get that horse to relax at all. He was just super aggressive. And I mean, he can run 21 flat if you let him, you know, if something pushed him, he was going to go as fast as they went. If somebody let, if they let off him, he'd relax in 47 and 3 or something like that. But it was his own detriment that how aggressive he was, because he would not relax. He actually, he took Mucho Gusto a long ways in the Summer Derby. So, you know, you need a horse like Buscador. I wish he was maybe a little more aggressive, but we could probably get him to be a little more aggressive. I don't think that's the hard part. The hard part is getting a horse to handle, unlike Hustle Up. But that horse was amazing. Yeah, he's a New Mexico bred, the one that opened Prelude into the Sunland Derby. So he went into the Sunland Derby as, you know, like I said, a talked about horse and one of the favorites. So yeah, there's some New Mexico breds that can get there, but pretty rare. But yeah, he was a super, super talented horse.
Yep, he certainly was. You mentioned with Senor Buscador, maybe you can get him to be a little more aggressive. He's it's a stone closer, makes that one big run. Sometimes he gets there. Most of the time he gets there. But last time in the Risen Star, he came a little bit short. How do you do that, Todd? How does a trainer get a horse to be more aggressive in the afternoons?
Well, I think if the jockey, you know, asked him for a little speed out of the gates, I think he'd give him a little more. He just broke so poorly the first two times that they haven't done that. In the race the other day, he broke pretty good. He just, you know, the rider didn't ask him to go on, and the horse is just waiting for the rider's cue. So I think if you asked him to run away from there a little bit, I think he'd do it. So that might be something we think about doing next time, get him a little where he ain't so far back. So something we'll discuss and before he runs and kind of look at what the scenario of the race looks like.
Yeah, do you play around with that in the morning a little bit before you try it out in the afternoon on race day?
No, I mean, you'd have to take him to the gate and push him away from the gate and get it in his mind that we want him to run away from the gate. And we haven't done that, and we won't do that. But I think if all he'd have to do is get a little aggressive on him out of the gate, and I think he'd jump up in the race a little more.
Yeah, interesting stuff from trainer Todd Fincher here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, we're down to about the final 4.5 minutes of the program here, and we already talked about some of the other interests that you have, but you said that this is, you've always been single-minded on horse racing, but are there other sports that you'll follow or hobbies that you have outside of racing that you like to do when you get some downtime?
Well, my hobby is playing golf, which haven't got to do that much, but I like to get in a groove where I'm getting to play at least once a week, and hopefully two times a week, but that's a hobby. I love pro football. So that's off right now. So we're focused on horse racing now, but those are the hobbies. I love pro football and I love golf. I love to play golf, get out, swing and get some exercise and fresh air. And I just like the sport, but that's really my hobby.
Did you always stay loyal to the Denver Broncos, or is there another team you cheer for?
Broncos forever.
Yeah.
All my kids are Bronco fans. Unfortunately, I brainwashed them into that, but they're big-time Bronco fans. And, yeah, I'll never change. I'm a Bronco fan all the way.
What kind of golfer are you? What's your handicap?
Well, when I'm playing, I'm about a 13 to 15. Right now, I'm probably a 20. So, but enjoy it. Like, I'm in Houston. It's supposed to be good weather there all the time to play golf. We're not seeing too much of that right now.
No, not right now. We're not. That's certainly true. Let me ask you two more questions before I let you go. If you could choose one word to describe you as a trainer, what would that word be, Todd?
One word as a trainer?
Yeah.
Or a person?
Let's do both. As a trainer and as a person, how would you describe yourself as a trainer and then personally?
I think the same goes, maybe the same word. let me see the right word for it, but loyal, maybe, something like that, loyalty.
Yeah, as both a trainer and a person.
Yes, yep, I would say that. I mean, I've been accused of being honest to a fault, so sometimes I tell people the way it is, and it doesn't come off real good, but it's really the only, I don't see any other way but telling it the way it is, so.
Yeah, honest, consistent, loyal, all words to describe Todd Fincher, and he has been my special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fazit Tipton. Todd, I know it's a busy time for you. I can't thank you enough for spending the hour with me here on the program. All the best moving forward with Senor Buscador and all of your horses, and let's hope we're talking to you on the first Saturday in May as well.
I hope so, too. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, Todd Fincher, ladies and gentlemen, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazit Tipton. What a great story and such a nice person and somebody who is extremely well thought of amongst his peers. And when you really dive into his story and you hear, and I hope that you were listening to the entire program here tonight. If you didn't, head back and check out the podcast at horseracingradio.net. But his story of being you know what he did? He put his head down. And he did the work. His parents instilled a work ethic in him and his brother, Rhett, from a very young age. And his parents were both trainers. And his dad rode races. And they said, listen, you want to show up? You want to get ahead in life? You're going to have to work. And that's what he's done. And that's what made Todd Fincher successful. He is back on the Derby trail again with Senor Buscador here in 2021. Again, my thanks to Todd. If you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that on Apple Podcasts. I'll be back next week with another brand new edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fazit Tipton. Thanks for listening, everybody. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week.